So we're taking a one-week break from Genesis. Since it's a unique Saturday or unique weekend, I thought we would take a break and continue in Genesis next week. And so go ahead and turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Now we're about a month into the new year, and let me ask you all, how are your New Year's resolutions doing? Is everyone hitting them all the way, doing awesome? I came across a number of posts a while back that shared about some New Year's resolutions that have already been broken. Now, these posts were written on January 3rd, so just keep that in mind as we look at a few of these. So one person said, already broke my New Year's resolution by going to Wingstop. Now, that Wingstop is a wing place, you know, chicken wings, French fries, very yummy. They have them in Manchester. And I wish I had broken that one, by the way, but have not. Another guy said, my New Year's resolution was not to complain as much, and yeah, I broke that so quick. Probably some of us can identify with that. This one's a little bit sad. My New Year's resolution was not to cry at work this year. I've been back for 2 days and already broke it. Poor person. Poor person. This person said, just broke my resolution not to eat a whole pizza after saying it's not that great. 2 bites in. All right, well. And I believe this is the last one here. One more. So one person said, my 2023 resolution is to not drop my phone on my face when checking it in bed in the morning. Already broke it. I'm not going to do a show of hands here who has ever had the phone fall on your face. And then this person said, broke my New Year's resolution of being a nicer person. But in my defense, some of y'all are annoying. I thought that was funny. Now, let me ask you, have any of you broken any of your resolutions this year? And no doubt that many people, particularly if you're associated with church, had the resolution that you wanted to grow spiritually this year. And maybe it was in different words, but at the beginning of the year, you decided that you wanted to become a better person, spiritually speaking. Or maybe you didn't have any resolutions. You're not one of those resolutions type of people. But you recognize that something needs to change inside of you this year. So maybe this past year, maybe the past 5 years, or maybe the past 20 years, it's been a time of spiritual dryness in your life, and you don't know where to go or what to do. And if you can identify with any of those, then you're going to get something out of today's message. This sermon is for you. Because today, I want to give you one important way. In fact, one of the most foundational ways to grow in your faith. So before I give you what that is, I'm going to go ahead and read our main passage. So again, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 4 through 7. I'm going to read all three of those verses. Sorry, all four of those verses. In their case, the God of this world has blinded their minds of the unbelievers to keep them from being the light of the gospel, the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. And we'll get into this passage in a moment, but let me start by giving you all the main point. And this is split into two parts. So here's the first part of the main point. So how do we grow in our faith? And we do that by giving our lives to Jesus Christ. Giving our lives to Jesus Christ. Now, many of you here are already believers. You've already put your faith in Jesus Christ. And if so, I want you to just bear with me for a moment. But I want to tell you why it's so important to be a Christian in order to grow spiritually. And to do that, let me tell you a story that I've told here before, going back to the Civil War. And this was about a very strange incident that took place near the end of the war. And if it had been successful, then the war would have ended many months prior than when it did. And so there was the Union Army, they were surrounding Petersburg, Virginia. And the Confederates had these huge defense works set up. And by that point in the war, both sides knew that a strong defense, even with less people, could keep away a larger offense. And so both sides just sort of sat there for months and months. And as they were waiting, one Union soldier who used to be a miner in Pennsylvania went to the general and suggested that they build a mine underneath the Confederate defense works. And so the soldiers dug a main shaft going 500 feet to the Confederates underneath them. And then the shaft turned left and right under the fence. So it sort of went parallel underneath the Confederate defenses. So once they built that tunnel, they then moved 320 kegs of gunpowder, which was 8,000 pounds of gunpowder, into the tunnel. And so one night when they were all ready, they lit the fuse and nothing, at least at first. So apparently the fuse had gone out. And so some unlucky soldier was sent in to relight the fuse. I'm glad I didn't get that job if I was there. So he went in, he relit the fuse. I'm sure he ran out. And then at 4:44 a.m., the tunnel exploded. And it exploded much bigger than they expected. And so it blew up the entire section of defense works, killing 278 Confederate soldiers that were there. And the crater was 170 feet long, 120 feet wide, and 30 feet deep. And you can see it to this day. And so for a full 15 minutes, there were no Confederate soldiers around. And so if the Union soldiers had been ready and able to, they could have stormed into Petersburg and likely have ended the war right then. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. And the reason is because for the 2 weeks prior to that, there was two brigades of the U.S. colored troops. They were training for the assault. So they were planning that after the explosion took place, they would then run around the explosion and go right into Petersburg. But the day before the explosion, General Meade had second thoughts because he wasn't sure any of this was going to work. So General Meade didn't want to have that particular group get slaughtered and then have bad press in the news for him. And so he told General Burnside to select another group. So General Burnside drew straws, and General James Ledlie was in charge of leading the troops. They had not trained for it much now. And so they were supposed to run around, but this new group, once the explosion took place, they ran right into the crater and then set up a defense. They did the exact wrong thing that they were supposed to do. And you would think that General Ledlie would see what they were doing and say, "Hey, get up and keep going forward." But unfortunately, the problem was that General Ledlie was not there. He was in the back, far, far away, safe and drunk. And so he was not there leading his troops. And because of this poor leadership, the Union soldiers didn't move forward and wasted a very good opportunity. And so it led to an engagement, and after 3,798 Union soldiers died, they were back to where they started. Now, don't worry, this is not a Civil War lecture that you've come to on Saturday morning. But let me explain why this is important to what we're talking about from our passage. You see, just as the assault failed because of poor leadership, your spiritual life will also fail if you lack the right spiritual leadership and direction. And when it comes to the right spiritual leadership, there is only one person who will do, and that's Jesus Christ. And so if you don't know Jesus Christ, then you don't have the right leadership in your life. And if you don't know Jesus Christ, then as our passage says, you are spiritually blind. Let me read verse 4 again. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. Now, did you catch that? That those who don't know Jesus are spiritually blind. They have been blinded to the spiritual realm of this world. And so being spiritually blind, they're unable to see what God is doing and all the spiritual things around them. And so you can't grow spiritually if you're spiritually blind. And I'm not picking on anyone here. I once was blind too. And the only reason I see now is because of what Jesus Christ has done in my life. So this is not a, ha-ha, we're better than you. This is a, awesome, God saved me, now he can save you too. Now I want you to picture a man who walks confidently into a restaurant and looks around waving to people like he knows everyone. There's only one little problem, and that is that he's blind and he doesn't know anyone in there. And so he sits down at the table and puts the menu in front of him and pretends like he can read the menu and points at what he's ordering, not knowing what he's ordering. When the waiter brings out the food, this blind man then goes ahead and attempts to eat it without anybody helping him. And so he takes the fork and he puts it down onto the table, missing the plate, and brings the fork up to his mouth with no food on it. And the waiter asks if he needs any help, and he said, "No, I'm perfectly fine. I'm fine. You don't need to help me at all." And as sort of silly as that situation is, that is exactly what someone looks like if they don't know Jesus from a spiritual perspective. They go through life not seeing things the way they are, and yet going as if they're perfectly fine. And the only way that we can grow spiritually is if we have had the blinders removed from our eyes. And that happens by putting your faith in Jesus Christ. So that leads to the next part of the main point. And so you give your life to Jesus Christ, but then the second step is that you continue living with Jesus Christ. Let me read verses 5-7 again. "For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in jars of clay, to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us." So let's ask the question. Once a person has been unblinded, so to speak, what then? What now should the person do? And if you were reading these along with me, there's a number of action words that come out and important points that come out of that. First of all, verse 5, he talks about they proclaim Jesus Christ. Verse 6, that the light shines in their hearts. And that is a continuous shines in their hearts. Verse 7, they treasure what they have. And so all this to say that Christ's salvation happens one time. So salvation is a one-time thing. But it is really just the start of a process that lasts a lifetime. That's the fancy word for that is sanctification. But it's a one-time salvation, but then for the rest of your life is the process of growing more and more like Jesus Christ. To try to illustrate this a little bit, I came across a video that, let's go ahead and let's take a look at that for just a few seconds. Now, for the sake of time, we'll say it goes on for like 5 minutes after that. But the reason that I show you this video is just to give you a little taste of what the Christian life is like. That the dominoes started because there was one little push over. But after that first one was knocked over, how exciting would the video have been if that was the only one that fell? Everyone's sort of sitting around waiting for something else to happen. They would have been like, all right, great job. One domino down. Let's go home, right? The first one was absolutely necessary, and nothing would have happened after that if the first one hadn't happened. But that was just the start of what was to continue after that. So it initiated something that went on and on. And likewise, if you've put your faith in Jesus Christ, then that is the first step, putting your faith in him, being changed, being transformed by him. But that is just the beginning of the process of him continuing to transform and change you, to become more and more like him. So don't stop. Don't just put your faith in him and become a Christian, so to speak, and then stop there and do nothing. Because that's not the point of the Christian life, is just to pray the prayer or to say, Lord, please come in my life and be the Lord of my life, and then not do anything after that. And so we must continue to grow and to grow and to grow. And that raises an important question. How do we continue to live in Jesus Christ? There's a lot of different things I could give here, but I want to give you something more, just broadly speaking, by asking you another question. So what's the difference between a married couple who's in love and a married couple that's not in love, or maybe a couple that's separated? So the separated couple is married, and they likely know each other very well. So they're still technically married, but most likely some of the traits that are going on between that relationship is that there's likely little interaction between the two. There's likely very little intimacy between the two. They're possibly pursuing intimacy with someone else. They're likely not aiming to please the other person. And they're likely not interested in serving the other person. So that's a couple that's maybe married but is separated. But let's think about some characteristics of a couple that's married and in love. So there's lots of interaction between them. There's lots of different types of intimacy between that couple, and it's only between that couple. They aim to please each other, and they aim to serve each other. And that right there gives us a picture of what we should pursue in our relationship with Jesus Christ. That it's not just a one-time thing, praying to him and then stopping. It's a continual, that if you love him and follow him, there's lots of interaction between you two. There's lots of intimacy with him and only him. You aim to please him because you're in love with him. And you aim to serve him. So you can be a Christian and have no interaction with God, but that's doing it the wrong way. You can pursue no intimacy, but again, that's doing it the wrong way. So instead, we should constantly want to spend time with him and pursue intimacy and aim to please him and serve him. And that's what I mean by continuing to live in him. So it's seeking to have a loving and growing relationship with him. It's seeking to learn more about him through studying your word, the word, studying the Bible, through spending time in prayer, through doing things, through obeying what he says in the Bible. And as you do those things, you continue to live in him and continue to grow in your relationship with him. Now, I came across a while back a YouTube video about this plane that ended up crashing in Russia, and it was because two teenagers were allowed to fly it. So it was in March of 1994, and a Russian plane left Moscow Airport, and it was in an Airbus A310. And there were only 50 people on that flight at the time. And two of those were the backup pilots, 13 and 16-year-old children. And so they had a main pilot and co-pilot, but then they have one backup pilot who would come in when the main pilot needed a break. And so in the middle of the flight, the main pilot wanted to rest and was relieved by the backup pilot. And during that time, the backup pilot then let his 13 and 16-year-old into the cockpit. And so the 13-year-old asked to fly the airplane, so that the dad let her in the seat. And so he then changes the autopilot settings to coincide with what she's doing. So she thinks that she's controlling the yoke. She thinks she's flying it, when in reality it's just the autopilot, or so he thought. And so after that, he then lets the 16-year-old on into the pilot's seat, and the dad does the same thing. The teenager is flying the plane, so he thinks, and the autopilot is flying it, at least so the pilot thinks. But the problem starts when the son moves the yoke more than he's supposed to. And in this particular plane, when the autopilot is on, a person can still turn the plane if they turn it hard enough. So you can sort of override the autopilot. And so the son is essentially overriding what the pilot has put in into the autopilot. And so for a while, no one notices as the plane slowly rolls and starts to descend. And as they do realize it, they're confused about why this is happening. And so the first officer is in the other seat, and he starts moving the yoke the other way. But this plane also has a feature where if the two yokes go in different directions, it sort of breaks the connection, and then just just one of them controls it. And so as they're noticing what happened, finally, the backup pilot kicks the son out of the seat and gets in there. But by then, it's too late. The plane has lost control, and the pilots panic and are unable to stabilize the plane. And within minutes, the plane has crashed into the ground, and everyone on board is killed. But the investigation found that if they had actually, at one point, when both pilots were in their seats, back in, if they had just let go and let the autopilot do what it was supposed to do, instead of trying to override it, then it would have stabilized the plane. But since they were yanking at the controls, they were overriding what the autopilot was needing to do. And that's what ended up leading to the crash. And so, church, if you want any chance to grow spiritually this year, then you need Jesus in your life. But after you turn to him, you need to let him take control of your life and have him pilot your life. I'm not a fan of Carrie Underwood, but her song stands true, that we need Jesus to take the wheel of our life. Not just once at the beginning, but all the time. Letting him take control of where we go and what we do. But if you're constantly yanking the controls back from him, out of Jesus' hands, so to speak, you're going to crash your life. So I encourage you, give Jesus your life and then let him continue to guide your life every step of the way. And that's how we grow in our faith. So let's go ahead and let's spend a moment now. And prayer and worship team, you can come on up.